Hey guys, it's Charlie, and welcome to another episode of Talking to Charlie. Last episode, we were joined by my very good mate, Paddy, who was able to give us a very candid account of his experience as a father when his daughter, Hazy, was diagnosed with an extremely rare form of leukemia, JMML, how it affected him as well as his wider family. You may also recall he'd wished he got his wife, Alice, to come on instead, as he felt she'd be much better at this kind of thing. Well, firstly, I think he was being a little too hard on himself, as I'm sure we can all agree. He was an amazing guest. But I've also now granted him that wish too, as today we're going to be joined by his lovely wife, Alice. We'll touch on some of those poignant moments that Paddy had alluded to, but also try and make sense of what life post-Hazy ringing the bell has been like for her as a mother, as well as the rest of the family. So let's go ahead and grant him that wish. Alice, hello and welcome.
Hi, Charlie.
How are we doing?
Very good. And I can't believe you've got this amazing show.
Oh, well, that's very kind of you. Well, I can't believe I managed to get you on this show, because I know in the past you have been reluctant. But having had your husband Paddy on previously, they mentioned that actually he felt you would be better served to be on this show, which I felt he was doing himself a slight injustice, because he was
absolutely
an amazing guest. And I know you've listened to it since, but also just to have you on now, I think it is fantastic as well, because we mentioned it was all around emotions and trying to get a perspective from a parent upon a child's diagnosis. We had Paddy as a father of Hazy, and now we've got yourself as a mother. But I'm conscious I don't want to be covering old grounds. We recall the magical moment of when she rang the bell, which I know was very special, but also was full of mixed emotions. And really just trying to understand and ascertain what life has been like for you specifically and your family from that moment until the present day. I think, you know, that probably for me would serve as a good starting point, really. Firstly, how is Hazy?
Hazy is absolutely thriving. Thank you so much. She was 10 a couple of weeks ago, so she's now double figures, and she's at school today, and her big sister, Romy, who's 12, is great. And Wilbur, who's 8, will be playing cricket today. So he's jolly happy.
Good man. That makes me a proud godfather as well.
Yeah, exactly. Godfather Charlie is happy about that.
Godfather Charlie. So just on that bell ringing, a very magical moment, the infamous bell. We all see it. We've seen many video clips, and it is a very emotional day. Paddy did mention that, yes, it's that special moment, but immediately there is that sort of sense of panic, disjointment, disconnection, worry. One isn't able just to fall straight back into an ordinary day's life. Life is very different from that moment. Let's try and remember that day itself, and then we'll start from there.
Yeah. Well, I think it's such a great point that you raise, and it's all you want when you're on a children's pediatric oncology ward. And we were in the bone marrow transplant unit of Great Ormond Street for a long time. And it was all we wanted, was to get to that moment of ringing the bell. And whilst we were on that ward, which was a period of on and off for about 6 months, we never once heard it ring.
Really?
Never once, no. So I used to walk past it every day, 10, 15 times a day, to get a cup of tea or head out to get some lunch, and we never once heard it ring. So it was an incredible moment, and we have taken so much gratitude from that to have got to that point. The odds for a bone marrow transplant for children is basically 50-50. So flip of a coin, heads or tails. And she made it, and we all made it. We all came through, and we got to ring that bell. So the gratitude that we feel is completely and utterly enormous, continue to feel every day.
You mentioned you hadn't heard that bell. You were obviously very familiar with everyone within the hospital. You probably made a lot of friends with other patients and families through those 6 months. So, as you mentioned, to not hear that bell at the same point was probably pretty daunting, nonetheless.
And our local hospital as well, where we were based for a 2-year period, that we didn't hear it there either. So we were just over the moon, so happy to have reached that point. But as with all these things, it's a double-sided story of celebration, and that the story doesn't just end there. Because for, as you know, being a survivor yourself, for any survivor, and I have to be careful when I say this, because we did survive, and that is absolutely miraculous. Hazy survived. But if there's a survivor of a car crash, that implies there's been damage. It was a near miss there. The car will be a wreck. It may have been written off.
So you're implying about the repercussions of...
coming out of something as a survivor. You're not whole, really. There are repairs that need to be made to the car. Yeah. The person who comes out isn't unscathed. There'll be fractures and broken bones and head injuries. And I didn't know about this part. I was just heading towards that bell. That's where we were heading. I had no thought for what came afterwards. And as Paddy mentioned, when you guys chatted, I'd had a baby at the same time as Hazy was diagnosed. So by this point, he was two and a half, and we needed to reconnect. And I think when you look at that time, that sort of two and a half year period, it's like you've been running from a tiger and you don't notice thorns in your feet when you're running from a tiger.
Hmm.
And then you stop, bang, start to notice those thorns, and they really hurt.
So when we're talking about that car crash, we're not talking specifically about Hazy. Yes, Hazy is inclusive within that car crash,
yes,
but clearly...
as a family.
All of you as a family came out of that experience affected in your varying different ways,
with damage,
Hazy, but more primarily emotionally, with damage, because it, as Paddy mentioned as well, it's a trauma. It was a trauma, right? It was a very traumatic experience.
And it was, if you're every morning waking up to a starting gun for a not insubstantial amount of time, thinking, will I live or will I die? Will the child live or die? You're on kind of hyper focus, hyper drive. I mean, I never sat down. I sort of ran in and out of lifts to get my lunch. I was just sort of in the hospital. I would cross off the treatment that she was having with Sharpies, different colors, rattling these Sharpies like sort of tambourines, just hyper, unable to control my movement, just constantly on, all the time.
And do you think that was a sort of, I guess, in some sense, a way of distracting you from being sat there with your emotions, with your feelings? Did you find unconsciously that you were just doing things to try and keep
probably.
Yourself?
Yeah, probably. I mean, I was like laughing with people, the nurses, we would joke and have these amazing conversations, but I was always kind of, they were very hyper-focused conversations. Everything was on hyperdrive. The cortisol and adrenaline charging through the system, keeping you in this kind of state of unable to, I didn't reflect at any point during the time. I wasn't conscious at any point during the time of being able to say, oh, this is quite tough. Or, you know, it was just, right, get through that, get back to the other two children, deal with their needs, come back into hospital, right, conquer that, you know, liver disease, kidney impairment, problems with the hearing, problems with her eyes, heart murmurations, all these constant side effects that were happening. So it was, that's why I like that expression of running from a tiger. You don't, and in that time, you don't notice the little tiny little kind of day-to-day shenanigans. So that keeps you going. You've got to keep focused. You've got to keep alert. But then when you stop and sort of land, the danger's gone, right? But in that place of sort of, it's kind of hypothetical safety that you've arrived at when we'd rung that bell. The pain, the danger, the pain had gone, but it meant suddenly then all that had been bottled for survival purposes could come out.
You mentioned, obviously, in and out of hospital, just from a maternal perspective. You then got Romy and your newborn, Wilbur.
Mm.
What's the sort of, not the dynamic, what's the facade you're having to play out there? And not facade, but, you know, your mother, you obviously got the hazy ill health, and then you're coming back and then just being as much of a mother as you can to Romy and Wilbur, probably without sort of trying to convey any sort of worry, anxiety, fear, whatever it is, to them. Do you remember that?
I'd come back and just, it would be so exciting to see them on a Friday, having been in hospital all week. And Wilbur would be kicking in the bouncy chair, and a new tooth would have popped through his gum, and he was learning how to eat solids. And that was so exciting, because Hazy was not allowed to eat anything for a long time because she was on IV nutrition. So feeding him was so satisfying, and hanging out with Romy, playing with her little toy cuddly rabbits, and reading stories, and just trying to make things as normal as possible, drink hot chocolate, go to bed, just trying to keep things safe and calm. And we really did try not to put any of our tension onto them. Time will tell, and perhaps we'll get onto some of these areas, because there was fallout there. But I think the place that I'm coming to now, and which I'm so grateful for, is that what my purpose is now, what I want to do now, and what I've been doing for a while, is training myself to deal with those thorns again.
And by the way, it sounds amazing, that sort of, like a sanctuary, if you like, just being able to be with your other children at the time.
Yeah.
It was so warming to hear that, just to the way you spoke about that. It was lovely. Let's go back to the tiger's no longer chasing you. Now you can feel the thorns in your feet. And I assume Paddy is of the same ilk as well at the same time.
Absolutely.
Was it quite immediate insofar as going, shit, there's the mind is starting to take over, the mind and body, whatever it is? Was there a sort of initial learning process or feeling, if you like, for yourself and Paddy when, shit, we've got some work to do now. Life, as we once knew it, is by no way going to be normal.
It's such a great question. I think for me, I think I was probably unconscious after ringing that bell for 2 years.
Really? 2 years? What, just almost just putting a front on, going, okay, we're back in the swing of things. Almost in denial that there's shit going on in here, in the noggin, as it were.
Yeah, but equally denial, but also ignorance. I wasn't aware that there should be anything to, I wasn't aware that I was so disconnected with myself. And I wasn't aware that I was basically still living in survival. I wasn't aware that the fears that were, that I was finding life frightening because a cry or a bleat or a moan or a whinge from one of the children made my brain irrationally think that it was stuck back in those days when somebody was crying or bleating or whining or moaning because death was a likely outcome.
Like a trigger.
So it was a trigger. When I would drop the children off at school, for instance, I was so frightened of abandoning them. I thought I was abandoning them. Because when I was in hospital with Hazy, every time I left her to go to the other two, I was abandoning her. And every time I left the other two to come back to Hazy, I was abandoning them. So my brain was interpreting taking them to school as the same thing, and they weren't the same thing. Right. So I was having panic attacks and imagining that there was a pack of lions in their classroom waiting to devour them. And this was the irrational reaction that was going on in my neurobiology. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. 100%. When it got to that point, was that when you really thought, I probably need to address this? This is two years far gone now.
Yeah.
It's time we put some method behind the madness.
Yeah, definitely. And I knew I wanted to live fully. I mean, life doesn't wait on the wounded. I wanted to move forward. I wanted to get past these fears and these sort of night terrors and day terrors that I was having. I also wasn't helping because obviously there is an element of what I project will be reflected in the children.
Yeah, 100%. I know that firsthand as well. And I think you probably learned more so in the past few years of healing. And I think, as you mentioned before, you have to be so self-aware that when you were coming back from hospital, you didn't want to be conveying any emotions because children are like sponges, right?
Yes. Yeah. And so that's such a good point, because so whilst we were in hospital, I could do it. Mm. I could box it away to keep them calm. But then when I came out, I couldn't box it away anymore. And so I had to go into very rigorous training to teach myself to insulate myself from their discomfort. So it was like having to wrap myself in, I kind of described it as Teflon coating, like on a saucepan, to stop myself from feeling their discomfort. Because if they were cold, I would take 15 coats in the car. If they ran out of Rice Krispies, I would jump in the car and go to the shops to buy them the Rice Krispies so that they weren't in this, in feeling any sense of, and part of that was guilt, my guilt of the season we've been through. But part of it was just that the noise that it made when they were dissatisfied or uncomfortable triggered such a visceral reaction in me that I couldn't contain these feelings. So I would instantly try and put fire blankets on all of their needs. And what I learned was that I cannot set myself on fire to keep everybody else warm.
Wow. That's a very powerful sort of analogy.
Right? Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So I absolutely wasn't doing anything.
These analogies are amazing.
What? Well, I've had a lot of therapy. I've had a lot of therapy.
Hey, look, we've both been there, exactly. And I think it's been
amazing. I wouldn't be there.
Talking about it like this is always great. I guess, though, that there's clearly an element of just trying to be a mother. You're in hyper mode as a mother. You're like, as you mentioned, trying to put 50 coats on a child who's just said, I'm cold. That's just maternal instinct there, right, as well.
Sure. But it was...
But then point where you said, I'm sort of in mother overdrive here. This isn't normal.
And I have become quite sort of fixated on how important childhood is for the rest of life, getting these foundations right. And so for a not insubstantial time that our children were living in relatively unsettled times. So there was some, I wanted to kind of patch things up for them, but I wasn't doing it in any sense the right way. And so what I've learned now is this sort of actual kind of physical reaction that I have to take, which is that when I hear a cry, or even just a, I'm not happy about going to school today, I just have to notice it. So just consciously aware, acknowledge it, and taking a deep breath, tell myself, I actually have to physically, in an audible voice, tell myself that this sound reminds me of a time when somebody was dying, but this is not the same situation. And when I hear myself saying that, I literally shift from one part of my brain into the executive center where I can make rational decisions. And from there, I can move forward with it and I can sit with them in the discomfort. And within half a second, half a minute, we've all moved on. And then they see in me the calm, well, I'm saying this, I'm quite encouraged. They say you only need to get it right 30% of the time. For children.
It sounds like you nailed it.
So literally, I'm never scraping the pass mark.
Is this all, because Paddy mentioned you were very methodical upon diagnosis. He dealt with it this way. You dealt with it more about, I want to know everything and anything. Is this something you're doing in a similar vein yourself to this moment? Or as you said, you engaged a therapist who has been instrumental in that understanding the journey, the healing, if you like.
Yeah, absolutely. Both of those. You know, I sort of yearn to kind of unpick everything more. I find I have to, in order to understand stuff, I also have to kind of commit it to writing. So I'm always writing things down and looking at a scenario. Oh, when this happened, okay, let's do it like this next time. And I, that for me is is just how I tick. I just absolutely, that's my sort of passion, right?
It's funny you should say that. I mean, I know we mentioned, and as soon as we see each other, even before this call, we just had a chat, but I feel very much at ease with you, Paddy. We just, as Paddy mentioned before, we just step into it.
Yeah.
I love digesting the sort of the thoughts, the emotions, the triggers and everything like that. I get carried away with it myself. I want to learn more. In fact, all my reading to date now is very much focused around psychology, childhood, whatever it is. It's fascinating.
It's fascinating. I guess in kind of retraining myself to sort of deal with the thorns, I suppose. I mean, I've touched on the children.
You mentioned you sort of feeling conscious or guilty about abandoning on both sides, be that Hazy when you left hospital, the two children when you went back to hospital. You mentioned the abandonment piece there. Paddy mentioned that Romy, we spoke about how every body was affected differently, but particularly the children. And I think Wilbur was probably too young really to have noticed outside of any of those emotions that you might have unconsciously conveyed or he picked up, as it were. But Romy in particular, she was really suffering or has suffered from slight attachment anxiety. The idea of you, Paddy, leaving the car, and I think you mentioned previously. How's that sort of manifested, probably the wrong word, how's that played out as a family dynamic for you?
Yeah, it's such a great question. I mean, I think I don't have any jurisdiction over really helping her move out of this place, but I have jurisdiction over myself and over changing myself. So in changing the way that I deal with her, it's just we're streets ahead. Because I now don't respond and react to her in the ways that I did when I was in fight or flight and panic mode. She then can just mirror back my calmness. And going back to my point that I only get this right very few times in a day or week or given month. But when I do give her the calm response and give her that space that she needs to calm herself down, rather than doing it for her, rather than setting myself on fire to keep her warm, I'm trying to teach her the skills to keep herself warm or to put up with the discomfort of being cold. Right. And doing that is mostly just about mirroring, I think.
Yeah.
I'm trying to get it right myself. But also it's about for children, is keeping them moving. So we've always got a cricket ball, we've always got a tennis ball, there's always a ball in the car. Wherever I go, I just like play catch with them because it just immediately brings them into a more logical part of their brain. And they calm. Right. They just calm down. As soon as I give them a ball, they calm down.
Yeah.
Wow. Or sort of getting out on the trampoline when they get home from school, burning off the we all have built up, don't we, throughout the day, you know, somebody treads on your foot or reverses into you in the Tesco's car park and it triggers you, it annoys you, whatever it is. And if we just go home and just flop on the sofa, we're not going to actually do anything to get that adrenaline and those chemicals out of our body. But if we get outside and kick a ball.
Yeah. If you're not careful, you start repressing everything and it just actually that can manifest and really convey or come out in a completely different way as in due course for the worse rather than better. I'm just going back. Paddy mentioned it as well, and I've got to be quite sensitive around saying it, but he suggested that actually the whole ordeal, I suppose we can call it that, was actually a blessing in disguise, because it's actually now made you, and evidently just listening to you now, so much better and well equipped as a family, as individuals, in terms of just on a day-to-day basis dealing with just the day-to-day things, where you can actually sit down as a family and actually the conscious awareness piece we touched on, but you can actually sit there, become more self-aware as opposed to sometimes.
Well, do you know what I want to do is have another baby.
You want to have another baby? Oh my gosh. It was just, hold on, is this an exclusive? Right, does Paddy even know this?
Yeah, he's absolutely not having it, but here we go. I'm putting it out there again. This is what I just want to crack on again. And
because sort of, because of everything you've learned and everything you've been through, you just know I'm going to be the freaking nuts if I were to have another child. I am so. Do you know?
Definitely is that not. What it is? But no. It's just, you know,
well, you would be more than 30%.
I might scrape 25. No, but you know what I mean. So I completely take your point that when you go through something, an ordeal, there's something so incredible about the, well, certainly for us, we were just, our hospital became like a sanctuary for us. It was a place of actually peace and of wholeness. And because of the rawness, it took us to the kind of, she was at the psychological brittle limits of her body. And we were too, as her parents, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, and physically. And at that place, I think, is where you sort of, something extraordinary happens and you tip over into actually living. And so there was something so, I mean, magical is a word that's coming into my head, about that ordeal where the light shines so brightly because of the darkness. And then equally, as you're saying, this whole piece of taking and learning and being able to double down on all this side of kind of the after effects, the post phase that we're going into now. Yeah, I mean, I'm just, whilst I wouldn't wish Hayes's disease and treatment on anybody in the entire world, this is where we are.
Yeah, incredible. What, and I mentioned briefly with Paddy, but from a mother's perspective, how's Hazy day to day? Did she, was it just too young to even really sort of notice?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, amazingly.
Just adorable and great.
And, you know, she was on intravenous morphine most of the time. So she was comfortable largely, and she had the security of our constant presence.
Yeah.
And us kind of mirroring to her a face of, don't worry, it's going to be okay. We're going to get through this. Yeah. We were always giving her that face.
Yeah.
And
incredible.
We were always trying to give the other two that face as well. Don't worry, it's going to be okay. Invariably, those kind of faces cracked a bit, but very majorly cracked afterwards. So they all got that face of, oh my goodness, this actually isn't okay anymore afterwards. So it's from there that we've all been having to rebuild. And Wilbur as well, you know, he was, you mentioned quite rightly, he was a baby. So he's, you know, he just needs a cricket ball. His narrative is and will be that I wasn't there for 2 years, and for a long time afterwards, emotionally, I wasn't there either. But I am living wholeheartedly for him now.
Amazing. And I think, as you mentioned, we focus on childhood and how all those emotions, I guess one will only find out in due course, but it sounds like it's very unlikely, but potential repercussions of how the whole experience has affected, that will come out in the wash. But evidently the fact you're so up to speed, so knowledgeable and everything around it, I think is, well, a blessing in disguise, really, in that respect. Because it's so well-versed. I think, yeah, there probably might well be repercussions.
Potentially. You know, And I mean, who knows, you know, with anything, but I've always believed that after any defeat comes victory.
Yeah. Lovely.
And that's the way I live. Yeah. So this is a victory story for them.
Yeah.
All the way.
Okay. Yeah. Incredible. You're going to hate me for saying this. I said it to Paddy as well, but I'm fascinated and I want to speak to you for the rest of the day as if I was staying with you of a weekend, which I do regularly, and we basically get into it like this all the time. Clearly, everything you've been through, I think a pen needs to be put on paper. And I know that you are in the jits, if you like, of potentially thinking about bringing a book or some description out. What are you doing for yourselves, for other people, in terms of everything that you've been through and learnt to date?
Number one, Paddy would like to say he's got to come first.
Yeah. Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. I see that as a mate as well. I'm like, God, Paddy comes first. I get it.
So we've definitely had to regroup ourselves. That's taken time. And the way that that kind of manifests is that we try to put in time. And we've tried alphabet dating. Have you tried that?
Oh, yeah, actually, well, you sort of jumped to my point there. I've never actually mentioned Paddy, really. Yes, we have, but we mentioned Romy. Obviously, the dynamic between you two.
Yeah.
And I know that you both, the healing, you get so revved up and excited about it together, collectively as well. That's why I get so excited about being around you guys. But yes, now going back to your point. No, I haven't tried alphabet dating.
Okay.
I think so meeting in a first would be a bit of a first for me right now, let alone alphabet dating, whatever that was. But anyway, please. For the benefit of our listeners, what is alphabet dating?
Okay. It's hard to carve out time, right? Okay. So, and that's what, if we both know that in the sort of day-to-day humdrum of things, there is a date in the diary, which is exclusively reserved for us and it's non-negotiable, then we're a slick machine, you know? And so we tried alphabet dating for a while, which is where we put all the letters of the alphabet in a pot. Children loved it. And then we'd draw out a letter. And whatever letter you got, say, you then have to come up with the date, which corresponded to an activity beginning with that letter in a geographical location beginning with that letter. So his favourite would have been Charlie. Our next door village is called Brisley. His favourite would have been bonking in Brisley, right? I mean...
Right, okay. And I didn't realize this was all is this all inclusive? The kids were involved here as well.
No, they couldn't come on the date.
I thought you mentioned the kids. The certainly kids
not.
Loved it.
No, they loved us pulling out the letters, but they certainly So we gave that a try for a while. That worked. I'm not sure we got it bonking in Brisley, but anyway.
I don't want to know. This is PG, Alice. Come on. But was this something conscious that you two were thinking, right, here we are as a couple, let's get back into the groove, as it were, the bonks or whatever. Let's just try things differently because you've been through that such a...
Yeah, and my brother's brilliant at this. For Christmas, he gave his wife a advent calendar with 12 doors to open, a door to correspond to each month. And behind each door is a different date. Right. Already written down and planned and sort of, you know, booked and paid for. So for her, his wife, she knows that come May, June, July, every month there's something in the diary organized for them to do together. It just sets the year up, right?
Yeah. Incredible.
So anyway, we're trying to get, I might attempt that in 2025. Let's see. Hugs are good as well. Just checking in with as many hugs
everyone
as possible.
Everyone loves a hug.
Everyone loves a hug.
Yeah.
And then I suppose just with me, for me, sort of how do I kind of get my sort of window of tolerance?
Yeah. How do you do day to day then? I suppose you mentioned, I think you journal a bit or you write things down. Obviously, there's potentially a book. There will be a book published one day. But also just giving back, I suppose. I know something we actually haven't really paid mention to, but I know faith plays a big part in your life.
I know my limits. I mean, I'm human, and I need to daily immerse myself in what I call God, and in doing that, I do that in the Bible. It's a sort of non-negotiable part of my day that I just have to listen to the still small voice of God every morning, and I'll try and spend time doing that two or three points later in the day as well, just to ground myself, really. People say faith is a crutch, and boy, do I need one. And I find listening to that, trying to tune in to that voice, as opposed to all the other voices that are clamoring for our attention every day, tuning into that voice is where I sing. That's where I sing. That's where I can get revved up to your point.
Incredible. Yeah, and you also mentioned you do a bit of charity work now these days.
We are both very in awe of a family whose little boy died at the same time that Hazy was ill. And his name was Toby. And the family have set up a charity called the Dear Toby Trust. And they've got three other children themselves. And as a family, we just want to do whatever we can to support them as they go about finding kinder ways to cure childhood cancer, because essentially the treatment is what took Toby's life in the end. It wasn't the actual disease. So the treatment has to be so intense that if we could find, if I'd been given the option, there is a kinder way to do this, my goodness, would we have bitten off that doctor's hand. So they are really making inroads into doing this. And that to us is just so, so exciting. And they're just such a beautiful family of grace that have walked this tragedy of losing their child. And they are just the most beautiful, special people. So whatever we can do to help them, we try to.
I'm saddened to say we're going to have to think about winding this up, because I could be speaking to you all day, and I will do when I come and see you again soon. But what do you do, what as a mother, as Alice, what do you find yourself doing day to day differently now that we are of the present day and we've been through the ordeal, if we call it that, and everything, such like the learnings and everything else that you've done today? What is Alice day to day outside of wearing an amazing, for those that can't see, garish sort of Nirvana bright pink jumper?
To that point, on the one hand, maybe on a more serious note, I have learned and taken from these last 5-8 years, I have taken the absolute assurance that life is not a promise that we won't go through bad times. So it's not if we go through bad times, it's when we go through bad times. And when we do, there will always be another with us in that fire. And for me, that another is a very strong knowledge and presence of an almighty God who holds us in his hands. And then just on a fun note, I would end by saying that just the more fun that we can have as a family now, we have been given a second chance in life. And I just want to maximize that. In every minute of every day, every time I see those children, they are all walking, talking miracles. And as a family, I want to step out there and, Paddy's point, step into it. Have more fun. Fun is the enemy of panic and fight or flight and anxiety and past trauma. Fun is the absolute antithesis of that. And so tell the kids, let's have pudding tonight first.
Yeah.
You know, let's have pudding before. Yeah, mix it up a bit. Just play, have fun, and just take every single moment with gratitude.
Life is precious after all, right? Thank you so much for your time. I think we can take so much from what we've learned from you today. You're an incredible person. You're an inspiration. Your daughter's an inspiration. Your whole family an inspiration. And if it's not alphabet dating, then it's, I'm sure it's something else that someone else can take away from having you on. So I just want to extend my sincere gratitude and love to you and the whole family. And can't wait to see you all again soon.
Thank you, Charlie. We love you so much.
Take care. You may recall my paying mention to a Dr. Gabor Maté in past episodes, the well-known physician and author. Well, he suggests trauma isn't what happens to you, it's what happens inside you as a result of what happens to you. And I think this is certainly very prevalent in this instance for both Alice and Paddy and everything they and the family went through together. Truly inspiring stuff. What I also found so liberating, if you like, is how they actually have taken this whole experience and learned from it, used it as a vehicle to actually better themselves, if you like, be that for the benefit of their relationship, their parenting skills, and their whole family dynamic. Incredible human beings, and a real example of how one can turn adversity into opportunity. I'm Charlie, this was Talking to Charlie, and I now have a completely different interpretation of what the alphabet is too. Take care, and look forward to seeing you again soon.